Consider this dismaying disclaimer. This podcast has no windows and no doors, which offers you this chilling challenge to find a way out. Of course, there's always my way. Hey everybody, welcome to AntCast. Before we get to the second segment here, which is the bulk of the show, I wanted to bring on erstwhile co-host Justin Savegas is back in the co-host chair. Hey man.
It's been a while. Yes. Yeah. Not that this chair doesn't feel like I remember it feeling.
Well, there have been many other butts in it since then. Yeah. So the reason we're having you on is because there's been a lot of noise over at Media Blasters, which is typically not a noisy company. And so we sort of wanted to talk about what exactly is happening over there. Firstly, they announced they were doing Redbox style kiosks for anime.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
I guess these are only in a couple of locations right now. I guess they're all in New York, I would
imagine.
Well,
the nice part about those vending machines, and that's what they are, vending machines, is they're, once you have them in place, I mean, they're obviously a couple thousand dollars to build and get made, but once they're there, they're pretty much free money. I mean, if the discs are, you know, being bought at a discount or their Media Blaster's own inventory, they can restock them for almost nothing. People can buy them if they like. You know, they have their credit card number in there. And it's just a really nice way of increasing visibility when visibility is really the thing that is hurting them the most. I mean, the retail shelf space is almost gone.
Right.
So this is a way to kind of get that back.
Do you think it stands a chance at being anything other than local to Media Blaster's physical location? Because Redbox pretty much owns this market at this point.
Right. And I don't think they're trying to compete with Redbox.
Right.
The thing about even Redbox kiosks is that because, you know, there's a finite amount of space in those little things, they can only carry, you know, a few hundred movies at a time.
If that.
So, if that, exactly. So you're simply not going to be getting any more than the big Hollywood blockbusters in there. For places like college campuses and, you know, places where, or say like St. Mark's Street in New York City, places that, you know, kind of revel in more off the beaten path stuff, Redbox would never really bother putting a kiosk there anyway. And something like this would be a much better fit.
Yeah, that's a good point. But, I mean, the Redbox thing is ridiculous. I've seen up to four of them stacked next to each other with huge lines for all four on Friday afternoons. I mean, it's nuts. Everybody uses those damn things. But you're right.
There is great business to be done there.
Yeah, right. But you're right. I mean, this is at a Target, you know, out in front of a Target or out in front of a Circle K or something.
Exactly.
It's not in the sort of, I mean, you could put a, at St. Mark's, you could put a Criterion kiosk and probably do pretty good business.
Oh, exactly. And that's, I would think that would be the sort of secondary inventory they'd be carrying. I mean, obviously they're not just going to carry anime. They're going to carry, you know, the schlocky Asian movies that Media Blasters peddles. They're going to carry, you know, some other stuff, probably some of the live action stuff that Funimation has done. There is some interesting stuff that can be done this way. And I think this sort of outside the box thinking, you know, it's experimental. They could lose a little bit of money if these aren't successful, but I don't think they won't be successful. I think it's a great idea.
Right. Well, interesting. I mean, that's the sort of thing that I'd like to see pop up in, you know, Silver Lake or whatever, you know, places where the taste of the average consumer in the area is not looking to rent the Karate Kid on, you know, Friday night. They want something different.
Exactly. And the other nice thing is they scale really small. So
right.
If they do take a bath on this, they're only out $40,000, $50,000, however much it costs to rent or maintain them. That's not a whole lot of money compared to like a bad license.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. So it's an interesting and not foolish experiment then.
Well, not only that, they've been, you know, Media Blasters, although slightly under most people's radar, they've been toying with the niche rental game for many, many years with that Rareflix thing that they have going.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how well that does. They had a big room dedicated to it in their office last time I was there, which was a couple years ago now. But if it's not successful, I imagine they wouldn't keep doing it.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's an interesting thing to do. So the other thing that came out of Media Blasters is that they now have a new partner.
Yeah, Allied Media Group, isn't it?
Yes, that is correct. What is going on here? Is this what are the parallels that can be drawn here?
Okay, well, this is actually very similar to when Central Park Media outsourced their sales division to WEA. Or many years ago when Manga Entertainment outsourced their sales division, and probably similar, although I don't know the fine details of the deal, to where Viz outsourced their home video sales, just their home video sales, to Warner Entertainment Group.
Yeah.
Basically, this is saying, you know what, I don't want to have my own in-house sales group, at least outside of, you know, the, at least I don't want the most people dealing with my staff directly. I need a buffer. I want to outsource this.
Right. From a and money perspective, this just makes more sense.
It depends. Media Blasters obviously hasn't done it up until now, and there's a lot of reasons not to do it too. One of the things that happened to CPM when they went with WEA was it really interrupted their cash flow for quite a few months as they got up to speed. The main reason to do this, however, is because you're really getting dicked around by the big box retailers.
Right.
One of the biggest problems when you're a little boutique manufacturer like Media Blasters is, and like CPM was, is that retailers, the bigger retailers especially, just abuse the fuck out of you. They withhold payment. They, rather than pay you, they just return product that they might have been able to sell anyway, and you end up having to pay for it again to repackage it. Sometimes you just don't get paid, and they're like, what are you going to do? Sue us? Cost more money? Litigate? Happens all the time. Has happened for years, but I do know that Media Blasters had taken a bath on one very big transaction like that, and that was one of the main things that caused their most recent problems.
Right. So. Yeah. Well, actually, specifically Viz, I know what happened with Warner. The biggest problem they faced is that internally they couldn't get their own product anymore. Any sort of DVD product coming out of Viz, I mean, good luck. Like, their PR people, they can't get copies because Warner, that's not where their priority is. Their priority is getting the product to the store. So promotionally, they have difficulty
right.
getting their own
product. So you might, you stand a much better chance of collecting what you're owed from the big box retailers, which, let's face it, that's a lot of money, and that's what everyone needs right now.
Yeah.
But you lose a lot of control. It's a gamble, and it hasn't been successful all the time for a lot of people. But if they feel they need to make that gamble now, that gives a pretty good indication as to where a lot of their problems have been coming from.
Right. So, do you think this was sort of a triage move? I mean, let's face it. Media Blasters has been on industry pundit death watch for 10 years now.
Right.
Was this let's save our asses move? Was it just something like an opportunity came up?
Media Blasters is some shrewd people.
Yeah, they know how to stay. They know how to stay alive for sure.
Yeah, I mean they're the equivalent of not to denigrate them, but they're kind of the video industry equivalent of a cockroach.
Yeah, well,
survive nuclear war.
CPM was that for a really long time too.
Yeah, and then Bank of America happened. But anyway.
Right.
In this case, I think, well, it's not a triage move in that it's not permanent. Or, I mean, it is permanent. You can't really do this sort of thing temporarily.
It's not a Band-Aid.
Exactly. It's a permanent shift in the way they're doing business. Is it in response to a lot of very bad things that happened to them? Absolutely. They're going to have to get used to it, this new way of doing business, and it won't be all good things. But it might work out better for them, especially because more and more shelf space these days is owned by big box retailers, and those guys, you know, they need all the firepower on their side they can get if they're going to get any money out of them.
Yeah, I mean, I was just talking to Lance last week about this, about retail shelf space, and, you know, looking at all these stories about Best Buy and how they're just phasing shit out, like it's going to be this sort of horrible cannibalistic grab for aisle space.
Best Buy, Walmart, to a lesser extent, Target. Those three places are the basically where America buys home video product now.
Yeah.
You know, and then to the 5% of the nerds out there buy online. And that's pretty much it.
Right. Interesting. Well, we'll see if it works out for them. I mean, it's good to see that, you know, they're trying some new things. And instead of just, you know, piling on licenses and stuff. I know they've had some issues with delays, but I think that's just media blasters.
it's been worse than normal. And I think a lot of it's probably cash flow related. So they seem – I talked to them briefly at New York Comic Con, and they seem to be starting to prop themselves up a bit. It was looking really bad for a while, and the bleeding has stopped, it looks like.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. Okay, awesome. All right, well, that about does it. Let's go ahead and move on. Okay, we're back. Our panel this week is consisting of everybody knows this guy, Jason Thompson. He writes House of a Thousand Manga for Anime News Network, better known perhaps for his book, Manga the Complete Guide, and his comic, King of RPGs. Everybody knows Jason. Jason, thanks for being on.
Thanks, Zach.
Sure thing. Thank you. And joining us again are Ninja Consultants, for the first half of which is Aaron Finnegan, who now writes Shelf Life and fights with our forum users. And her husband, Noah, the other half of Ninja Consultants, both returning champions to the show.
Hi.
Forums have been really quiet for the past month or so.
They have, yeah. I think people are settling down a little bit. But I'm having y'all on in a totally creative and completely unexpected show theme this week. We're going to talk about horror in anime and manga, which, let me tell you, I had to rack my brain to come up with this topic. It's super original. The week that a few days before Halloween, no less. But this is a genre that I've always been interested in. I'm sort of a casual horror fan. I own a lot of horror movies on DVD. I usually go see them in the theater. Horror in anime is not something I've really explored that much, and I think that's because there really isn't that much of it. Let's start with anime and move into manga a little bit down the road, because there's much more to talk about when it comes to manga, horror and manga. But I guess the first question I want to ask is, what is the best horror anime you've seen? Like, what immediately pops in your head when you think, here is the shining example of horror in anime? I guess we'll start with Jason.
Oh, man, that's tough. You know, I agree with you. There's not as much good horror in anime as there is in manga. I remember a lot of older stuff that I liked, like 3x3 Eyes. And I mean, but typically horror and manga, sorry, in anime is usually like strongly linked to science fiction or fantasy. And a lot of it is the straight up, you know, the straight up tentacle genre stuff, or is disturbingly close to that. I remember also liking the Mermaid Saga anime, you know, the ones based on Rumiko Takahashi's old series.
Oh, yeah. That got an even more kind of faithful readaptation in the last decade, didn't it? There was another Mermaid's Tears TV show that sort of stuck more to the horror concepts in the story.
I haven't actually seen that one.
No. Well, I think that's out. That's floating around out there. But as with every Rumiko Takahashi property that is not Inuyasha, it is roundly ignored by most anime fans. So basically stuff from the 80s is what pops into your head.
Yeah, I mean, there was a really crazy Kazuo Umezu OAV that was released that I've never seen anywhere except on like ancient fan subs, which was an adaptation of some of his horror manga. But that again, you know, continues to like a whole idea that is mostly a manga oriented thing, you know? Yeah, I don't know. I'm remembering a lot of like titles of people like melting into balls of slime and stuff, but it's all sort of blurring together in my head. So I think someone else should brain dive, you know, to quote from another A&N column and come up with another one.
Aaron, what about you?
Does Legend of the Overfiend count?
I was going to ask about that. Do you guys think that counts? Because it's not sexy. It's gross. And
I think it counts as horror.
Yeah.
I think it counts. I don't think it's demons. A sterling example of the genre. No. I think that it's very much its own little niche thing.
It's in its own category. But there are like demons and hell. And
oh, no, certainly.
Horrible things happen. Like, so that's, and it's definitely like, you know, there's a lot of horrible things that happen in anime where I'm like, you know, freaked out on some level that aren't necessarily in horror anime, and that's much easier to think of than like horror anime as a genre. But isn't like the classic one like Pet Shop of Horrors? I think I've only seen a couple episodes of that like 10 years ago,
which is again an adaptation,
yeah, of a manga.
What about Serial Experiments Lane?
Is that horror? Is it sci-fi?
Borderline horror, I would say. I mean, it's very creepy and weird. It's, you know, sort of more of a mind trip than like a, you know, eyeballs falling out of the head and massive bleeding kind of horror. But it's got some of the like, you know, slimy body horror stuff going on. And it's got a lot of like the existential, like, you know, your existence is a lie kind of, you know, kind of horror that you see in the, that, you know, later got mainstreamized and stuff like The Matrix.
That's
true.
Certainly true. I'd put it in there with like technological thriller.
Yeah, kind of.
I think that the horror in Lane doesn't so much come from the unknown. It's more like it's a some sort of a conspiracy plot, even though the conspiracy is really between the director and the animation team. I the title that I would really want to plug actually would be 100 Stories, was released here as Requiem for the Darkness.
That one's really great.
It's not super scary.
It's like a yokai genre.
Yes,
horror?
It's much more supernatural, but the style, I guess, is really remarkable. It's something that I don't think could be done effectively in another medium, just because the world, and this is a Tokugawa era story. The world is populated by weirdly humanoid creatures, and you're not certain as a viewer as to whether or not they're human.
Sometimes
are these just ugly people?
Sometimes a cop will just have like a wolf head or something.
Yeah,
it's not really, or a blockhead. But I think that's more like you're talking a little bit about like the art style and the character design is the horror. But I think the narrative of that is a really horror genre.
Oh,
thing.
Certainly.
Where like every time they find a place that's like haunted, sort of, or something's going on, and then it turns out like. Like in the first episode, it's the Akazuki bean washing kid who's like it's the sound that the guilty person hears. They just hear this bean washing, and then it turns out it's a ghost, and it's really gross ghost, and it's scary. And then they kind of exorcise, but they don't exorcise like the ghost. They kind of, the person who's guilty gets kind of sent to hell or something. They ring that hell bell thing, and you're not,
yeah, it's
looking to be blanky.
And that's one thing that I think prevents it from being a really, again, good example of horror is that the status quo is maintained more or less at the end of each episode.
But, you know, it's very rare horror that's really, it's fairly rare, the horror that's really, like, totally destructive. I mean, more often what you'll see is, like, the framing narrative horror, like Pet Shop and, like, Hell Girl, where, you know, it'll all be about, like, some mysterious shop, blah, 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 or some mysterious person who, like, investigates, you know, mysteries. And in every episode, like, someone dies horribly, but, you know, the sort of the absence of the story, the framing thing continues on because the dude who runs the shop or, like, the detective never gets killed, you know?
It's like Tales from the Crypt or something.
Yeah, totally.
Minus all the Halloween puns, yeah.
Right.
The thing that pops into mind immediately and was always, always shown, even though nobody really wanted to see it again at every Halloween anime club, was the Vampire Princess Miyu OVAs, the old ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember watching those once and thinking, well, that was okay, but because there's not that much horror anime, or there certainly wasn't at the early, in the late 90s, that
You're
was
totally
available,
right.
Everybody showed that. Yeah.
They're okay exactly once.
Yeah. And they're nice. I mean, they're nicely animated. They have, like, you were talking about Lane earlier, I think that that show certainly has a creepy tone, a creepy atmosphere, but I agree with Noah, and I wouldn't call it horror. Vampire Princess Mew sort of has the same thing going on, where it's got this sort of ominous, dark, supernatural shit's gonna go down kind of tone to it. It's not scary in the least. There's nothing scary about it, but it's definitely going for that tone. And I think there's more anime that's like that, where they're going for a tone, they're going for an atmosphere, rather than a Western-style scary movie.
But Mew, yeah. But Mew is like, I would say that Mew is less scary than Lane, because Mew is so romantic. It's got all that, like, so like shoujo and delicate, and like, you know, the Mew is like cute and Larva is beautiful, and they both have, they have their, like, you know, unrequited love thing going. But in, where it's not like Lane, where it's just like about this moe girl living in the nightmarish world of depression, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Actually, yeah. Right. Well, that's real horror, though. That's really scary shit.
Oh, you know what I forgot? I forgot the Devilman OAV. Those were really awesome.
Mm.
I'm not going to talk about the live action film, but the animation was really good.
Right.
What they did of it.
Yeah.
I've also written down I've only seen the theme song, but it was like the greatest theme song ever to the original run of Ge 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 no Kitaro, which describes like ghosts and ghouls, and they don't have to go to school or take exams, and it's like the funnest sounding theme song.
Yeah, that's interesting. Although Devilman, I mean, we're kind of getting into a classification war here, but I don't know that I would call Devilman horror. It's more like apocalyptic terror kind of a thing. It's not, you know, it's big gross monsters beating the shit out of each other.
One of the reasons that horror is underrepresented is that it gets subverted into shonen, where you consider series like Yu Yu Hakusho, which has all of the elements of horror, but it's not. It's a shonen fighting series.
Or Corpse Princess. And that yokai one that we were watching with the yokai master kid. It's like
and don't, shonen. Yeah. And then there's also, of course, the seinen, usually seinen action horror, with like Hellsing and Gantz, you know, which are really violent and nasty and gross and have a lot of scary stuff. But basically it's still about like kicking ass, you know. I mean, it's not horror in the sense that it's like a helpless protagonist or like a human person or most, you know, who's fighting against or something awful, you know. And I guess Devilman kind of falls into that category too.
Yeah, actually, one thing that I've never heard really brought up in a discussion of horror anime, but it's probably the best example I can think of something that is a really effective horror piece and beautifully done, Magnetic Rose. Like, that is a scary movie.
That's really good. Yeah.
It's a perfect example of a classically done haunted house movie. It's just really well done, but it never gets brought up. I think it's because it's part of memories and people see it as just this beautiful example of animation and don't really look at it as a horror movie, but it really is. It's a very traditional scary movie too, actually.
I think it's probably just not very widely seen.
I don't remember being very scary. Like, I remember mostly the opera part is what I remember, like the song from it and that Satoshi Kon did it and not the horror moments at the beginning.
Well, yeah, the whole thing is just kind of this nasty, decaying, and a very literally haunted place that ultimately kills the people in it. I think it's pretty close. Yeah, yeah. Right. Well, okay. House spaceship. Who's counting? But
sure. Well, I mean, no. I mean, it is. It's just like what was that horrible live action thing? It was an adaptation of Event Horizon.
Exactly.
I mean, not worst ever, but it's like The Shining in space done very poorly.
God, Event Horizon. I saw that in the theater.
I only saw it because I worked in the movie theater.
Too bad.
Oh, no, we all saw the theater. At least I saw it for free.
I love live action horror. You know, I try to watch every... Well, I try to watch every movie that comes out that I don't know if my heart is going to suck, you know. And those ones I watch with my friends. So,
we'll talk about live action horror at the end of all this. Okay. Have you ever seen an anime that you actually thought was not just like you're sitting on the couch going, "Huh, well, this is an effective use of mood," like where you were actually scared? Have you ever seen an anime that triggered that same response in you, where you're in a scary movie and you're actually scared by the film? Has that ever happened? Because I can't think of a single example.
Wicked City. No, I'm just kidding. I only have like ghost answers. Joke answers. I don't think so.
You know, I don't think so either.
In terms of frightening imagery, I can't think of anything that has made me jump out of my seat. In terms of striking sort of horrific images, I think there are a few moments at the end of Berserk, which are made all the more painful because, you know, you've known these characters through the whole series, and now, spoilers, they're stuck in hell, essentially.
They're the images that you'd like to, that you wish you could forget, like in Ninja Scroll, like with that chick who has bees, or person who has bees coming out of them or something. That's like gross.
I think that there are elements of Perfect Blue that I find very disturbing.
That's a good one. Yeah.
And it's not exactly supernatural horror because there's really no supernatural element. But her stalker certainly has a very monstrous feel.
Yeah, it's really
nice. Very inhuman feel.
Yeah, that one's more. I would call that more a psychological thriller.
Yeah, absolutely.
Than a straight horror movie. But it's very difficult to think of examples in animation, Japanese animation, that really come close to what anyone would really expect from, you know, something classified as horror. It's really tough to think about it. And you made a really good point earlier where all this stuff gets sort of stuffed into shonen shows like Ghost Hunt. You know, there is nothing. Nobody's ever been scared by an episode of Ghost Hunt. But it's using
there's one
all
kid
those,
and he's five.
Yeah, and he's never seen anything that has ghosts in it before.
JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. That's like a horror manga where suddenly all these characters show up and start kicking ass. It's like Yu Yu Hakusho, you know. It's like it always starts out. There's some like horrible serial killer or creepy monster, and then these bonchos and these badass dudes, you know, it's like eyeshadow come in and just kill everybody, you know. Anyways,
right now, but at the same time, the Japanese are not they don't shy away from the genre. J horror is a huge deal in terms of live action, you know, especially in the last decade.
Did you read that book from Vertical, the J horror book?
No, I did not.
I have not read it either. Have you read it, Jason?
I have it, actually. I'm interested in it.
But the guy who wrote it, the author, gave a really great panel at one New York Comic Con or New York Anime Festival like a few years ago. And although I'm not really that into horror per se, his panel was so interesting where he talked about how there are like hundreds of like really low budget horror films made not just in Japan but all of Asia. And they end up having these like memes sort of that move through them, like The Scary School was a thing and someone made a fake documentary, and then like the next year everyone was scared of their school bathrooms, and then every movie was about that from then on. Anyway, it's this whole really interesting thing, and anyone who's interested in that, really read that book. Like I haven't because I don't have time to watch live action movies.
Well, that's interesting because that's not unique to Japanese horror. That's very common in American horror as well. I mean, now we're seeing all these found footage movies are sort of the new staple of horror with your Paranormal Activities and whatnot. You know, that's sort of the new thing. And that moves through American horror as well. And it's like someone comes up with a good idea, everybody just copies it until audiences are sick of it, and then they move on to the next thing, whatever the next thing is.
So we're all so sick of zombies or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh, world is sick of zombies. So what's like, have you ever seen, like, in terms of horror anime, what always fails? What do you think always fails? In terms of something that just fails to get a reaction, fails to even be somewhat scary. My personal example is the Scary School thing. I really wish they would just stop doing that altogether because it just doesn't work. And it seems to have been done in every single horror anime ever.
I think you're talking about a specific kind of set of things that happen in American movies that don't happen in anime. And it's sort of like things that jump out from the screen during a quiet moment that kind of make you jump, or like a moody quietness where you know something is going to happen and then something happens. And I don't think those elements ever happen in anime in that way.
No way, you know, no way. Because the anime does the it's just a cat thing all the time. Like horror anime where they'll hear a crash and the character will turn around and there'll be some badly drawn cat staring into the camera. That happens all the time, though.
Here's an advantage that live action film has. You know that, like, if something's going to, like, jump out at the character, it has to actually jump out from, like, one side of the camera or, like, from some, you know, or off screen or from some object. I mean, I think in anime, there's a certain unreality which Because you know that somebody can just jump out from like this middle of the animation cell. Everything is a drawn image. It's totally, you know, vague. It doesn't have the same sense of space, of like spatial reality that I think kind of sucks people in live action horror movies.
Yeah, I think you're dead on with that. Like, blood can drip from the walls in anime, and it's not really scary because you don't think of it like that could be me and that could be happening in real life. Instead, it's more like there are these characters, they're well established in your head, and these things are happening to them, and it's not really like you can't really put yourself in the same situation if it's so drawn out. It's when it comes to horror, anyway. Like love stories, maybe it's different. Like you can more easily think of yourself in that situation, but
because you want to.
It's an emotion that can be triggered by things other than a visceral reaction, which is what horror really boils down to. And I think you're right. That was the other thing that popped into my head. Is it even really possible for something to be truly scary in the anime style, even on like a television budget? Like, is that even possible? Because when I asked myself, well, is it even possible for animation to be scary? And I said, well, of course. Like, look at that. Have you guys seen the that Claymation Adventures of Mark Twain?
No.
Oh, yes. I know exactly what you're talking about.
That
yeah.
thing is fucking scary as hell. What? That segment
There's,
with the segment
you're
with
talking
Satan.
About the segment that's the dialogue between heaven and hell.
Yeah, God, it's creepy. Yeah. Like, it's really creepy, and it's yeah. unsettling. And the first time I saw it, I couldn't stop thinking about it, and I think it gave me nightmares.
Yeah.
So obviously, but that's in three dimensions. That's very much in three dimensions. And it's using really grotesque imagery, really kind of creepy, unsettling imagery to get its point across. But I've never seen anything like that in anime.
Have you seen the Media Blast just put out this short of Hide and Go Seek? It's like Kakarembo or something like that.
CPM actually put that out, but yeah.
CPM, sorry. That was in 3D. I think that was a little scarier and moodier than most anime, but like still kind of surreal and like it was creepy.
Well, since we're just making the comparison with animation now, I'm kind of ashamed to bring up this example, but the American cartoon... the real Ghostbusters, which you may recall
yes.
from when we were all like 10 years old. There was one episode in particular that I really did find terrifying where the Ghostbuster crew were stuck on a farm in the middle of nowhere and zombies rose and they had no way to handle them. And at the very least... Although I don't know now going back, I don't know if it hold up now. But at the very least, I can say yes. Animation has, 2D animation has indeed inspired fear in my life at least once.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you're a kid, you know, there are classic moments in any Disney movie that are scary. And they're designed to be scary. And they're effectively scary, especially, you know, the older stuff from the 40s, 50s, and 60s. Plenty of incredibly creepy shit in there. Sleeping Beauty, for example, you know, has all those.
Yeah,
it's scary. And when I look at it now, I'm like, this is kind of terrifying. Like, I'm an adult, so it doesn't get me that way anymore. But if I just, you know, seeing it as a kid, yeah, it's really scary. But, I mean, anime is generally aimed at an adult audience, and I'm just having a really hard time coming up with something that was ever actually an effective piece of horror that wound up actually scaring the audience, and I cannot think of a single one. I'm sure people will race into the forums to tell us. Well
good. You good. Mean,
yeah, exactly. Of course. Yeah, that's what I want. But right, it's an interesting thing. However, shifting over into manga, which has a much, much deeper well of horror titles to draw from. Surely Jason, you can give us some examples of manga that really is effective at being scary.
I think the Kazuo Umezu's manga is unbelievably scary and very creepy. And also, when he fails at being scary or creepy, he will just draw something really gross and just be satisfied with that, you know? Yeah, I love Umezu's manga. I actually started learning Japanese in order to read his manga initially. I think manga has an advantage because I think manga... In manga, like anime, you're sort of you're trapped. You have to look, you know that you have to actively flip the page to see what's coming, even though you know it's going to be something really awful, you know.
You can't close your eyes.
Yeah. I mean, you can throw the book across the room, but it's I think it somehow it maintains suspension of disbelief better than animation because because, you know, you don't have to worry about like the crappy frame rate or something like that. Because, you know, all of that is, unless the art completely sucks, your imagination can usually process it to make it seem realistic. So yeah, I love Umezu's manga, and I love Hideshi Hino, and also Junji Ito, who is kind of a follower of Kazuo Umezu. In terms of literally manga that I could not read, Shintaro Kago. And that's not entirely because it's scary. It's also just because it's just disgusting. I mean, his stuff is really surrealist and imaginative, and the art's incredible. But it's, you know, he's got this stuff that sort of blurs the boundary between horror and pornography. And so you know, just this threat of knowing that he might draw some kind of horrible like image of sexual violence or something is just. I'm just like, I can't bear it even look at most of his stuff because it's just so creepy. Well, he did his title in Secret Comics Japan that Viz published like 10 years ago, the Punctures one. The people at the Same Hat blog have been translating some of his manga. Not a whole lot of it is available commercially in English, but yeah, his stuff is so creepy and so disgusting.
Did he do Holes?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one, Punctures.
Yeah,
Holes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but
yeah,
I
that's
think,
horrible.
Yeah, I know. And that was, you know what? That was the most tame story in the book that we chose, because that was the only one we felt we could get away with publishing. The others were all more disgusting than that.
That seems to be its own genre, in terms of subgenre, the disgusting stuff. You know, for a while I was getting virtually everything Dark Horse released, and there was a while there where they were doing a lot of those sort of gross out horror comics. And, man, some of that stuff was really rough. One of them, was it Octopus Girl?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I was bored one afternoon and took the cellophane off and opened it up and said, wow, I'm going to lose my lunch. This is disgusting. But that seems to be its own genre, and it doesn't get adapted in animation, because those images wouldn't have the same impact simplified for animation. I don't think.
Yeah, I think so too. Octopus Girl is pretty ridiculous. It's more like a parody of horror, you know, kind of like Reiko the Zombie Shop. It's kind of like a parody of Kazuo Umezu. Umezu has that like super stiff art style where everyone is only drawn from like two camera angles, and they also have their mouths wide open and are like screaming about everything. But when he does it right, it's so creepy and disgusting.
Give his titles.
Well, okay. Well, like the only stuff that's of his that's been translated is Orochi Blood, The Drifting Classroom, and the Cat-Eyed Boy from Viz. And Drifting Classroom is the best one. It's this awesome, like, sort of science fiction horror manga about a elementary school that suddenly gets transported into the future. Like, in the present day, the school just seems to explode, leaving this big pit in the ground. But they're transported into the future, which is, like, been totally destroyed by, like, pollution.
That's the future?
Yeah,
it wasn't clear. Sorry,
it's a bit of a spoiler, but that's okay. That's okay.
You find that out in the second volume, so it's not that much.
Yes. Oh, okay. It's not that bad.
So yeah, they're translated into this barren wasteland, and then it's kind of like Lord of the Flies, where they struggle to survive with limited resources. But unlike Lord of the Flies, there actually is like really horrible stuff in the world with them, and this is like this really grueling series where these little kids are just dying and getting eaten by monsters and like mutating, and all this crazy stuff is happening.
Their teachers are like slitting their throats.
Yeah, that's what really struck me, was that you do have monsters and horrible creatures, but what to me was the most frightening was the fact that the authority figures, they go mad, some of them. I mean, ultimately, it's the children themselves who have to sort of take charge, because nobody can handle it. None of the adults. There's one of the teachers who just you haven't really you've seen him in the background in some panels, and then finally he has a panel where he says, "This is it. I can't take it anymore," and he just slits his throat. That's really effective.
Yeah, you know, actually, you did a House of a Thousand manga on Drifting Classroom, and it got me interested enough to track it down.
Oh, cool.
And I found a few volumes of the book off, picked up some off of eBay and Amazon. And I have to agree, like, that is one of the most effectively terrifying manga I think I've probably ever read. And what struck me about it most, and the things that seem to impact me most in terms of just being terrified by something, is the whole chaos, catastrophe, followed by human beings descending into madness and treating each other like animals. The closest example I could find, I could think of, in terms of a Western film, were the crowd panic scenes in Spielberg's version of War of the Worlds.
Which
were really unsettling and really upsetting and scary at the time. And Drifting Classroom, while it's much more brutal and violent, of course, than War of the Worlds was, did remind me of that. And that is, to me, like the most effective, scary thing, just personally, is that sense of total panic and chaos and people just turning on each other like beasts. And Drifting Classroom was kind of incredible for that. I was really impressed with it.
Cool. I'm glad you like it. I love his stuff. He also has had a couple of other things published. Reptilia from IDW and Dark Horse did a couple of his things. They did Scary Book. And I don't remember if they published anything else. But actually, he's done a couple of other really, really long series in Japan, which are unfortunately Viz will probably never publish because they're like 20 volumes long or more. He did this awesome horror thing in the 80s called The Left Hand of God, The Right Hand of the Devil, which is just it's this anthology thing about these various weird horrors that are like have this other like supernatural force that is sort of on the side of good, and after a certain point in the story it just kills all the bad guys, but it's kind of traditional that way, but it's just so gross and so crazy. Yeah, the scene where there's this deranged serial killer who is like actually a who like doubles as like a loving single father, and he like will like he draws these little children's book pictures of the people he's killed, and he reads them as bedtime stories to like his like daughter who's like crippled and sick in bed, and and tells her how if she's a good little girl she won't end up having her throat slit by this other like girl X. But just really nasty stuff. And also 14, which is like the last long manga he did, which is a science fiction drama about pollution. And it has like an alien invasion, and it has like a chicken headed messiah who is like the creation of genetic engineering, who like is there to like destroy humanity and like save the animals because humanity's been destroying the planet with pollution, blah blah blah. But it's just like the most thorough and violent, nasty destruction of the planet that I've ever seen in any manga. And since the planet gets destroyed in a lot of manga, that is saying a lot.
Yeah, really.
Aaron and Noah, what about you guys? Any manga examples that stand out to you as particularly just exemplary pieces of horror?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was reading Cat-Eyed Boys, the other Umezo work, but that's much less scary than Drifting Classroom. Actually, I'm too scared of Drifting Classroom.
It's true.
It's not so bad.
I know, but I don't know. Apocalyptic.
It's pretty bad.
Kind of, it was like, no.
It's not as bad as 14.
I haven't read that. I
haven't read it.
Don't.
But with people, I don't find it. With people descending into madness at the end of the world or whatever, I haven't read Dragonhead because I'm way too scared to read it. But apparently, it's about the same sort of thing where, like, these kids are on a school trip through and they're taking the train to Hokkaido, and it goes through that one of the longest undersea train tunnels in the world, which we went through. And it takes like an hour going 90 miles an hour in the Shinkansen to get through this tunnel. So when they're halfway through, there's a major earthquake, everything's cut off, power goes out, like, everything stops, and they don't know. No one comes to rescue them for hours and hours, and they don't know how much time has passed because it's all complete darkness. And finally, like, people start coming around, and it's getting hotter, and they're running out of air. And they think maybe the world has ended. Maybe Japan has sank into the sea because there are no rescuers. And they just kind of start to get trippy and weird after however many volumes. Tokyo Pop was putting that out. I heard a lot of reviews of it, and I'm like, yeah, that sounds good. Sounds like I'll never read it because it's way too scary for me. But some other things I've read, I wrote down, like, I only read one volume of MPD Psycho for review. That's about serial killing and horribleness, and people have serial killers in their eyes. I'm too afraid to watch, like, the live-action show of it. And Dark Horse did Corpse Delivery Service, which is pretty horrifying, although not, I don't know, it's not that really scary.
It was not as horror-centric as I had hoped.
For
actually.
A series about, like, embalming and talking to the dead. And
it's more funny slash gross.
Yeah, I was surprised, actually, at how sort of hip it tried to be.
I got a few volumes in, and there was, like, you know, dismembered people and group. Like, I couldn't read it on the subway because it was too many gross scenes after three volumes or so. The other one I wrote down was I read the manga volume of Goth by, what's his name, Suichi or something? And there's a novel that got released, too.
Oh,
and
that was yeah.
That was all, like, a light novel. So it was all, like, serial killing and disgustingness. He mostly writes, I think, mysteries and that kind of light novel stuff in Japan. That was horror. Like, it was pretty gross.
Yeah, that was Goth is okay.
It wasn't quite as... The book was scarier.
I generally don't like Otsubishi stuff because it's really kind of light and YA, a lot of it. You know, it'll start out kind of creepy, but then they'll just be like, oh, well... You know, it sucks we have to grow up without, you know, with divorced parents or something like that. And it's sort of like, well, thanks. That was really, you know, non-exciting. You know, but...
One thing that happened in that book that I'm so sick of in Japanese horror and any kind of anime plot is, like, when I was little, I had this twin, and I killed them, and then I took their place, and now I'm not really me. I'm the other twin.
Yeah, Zach, when you were talking about cultural elements that don't transfer, that's exactly what I was thinking of.
I used to have a brother named Matt. No way.
And now I became that brother, but I actually am that brother. Oh, it's terrifying.
I'm the sister, and I changed my gender so I could be the other sibling. Anyway, that's the more.
Noah, what about you?
Oh, I would just mention Berserk again. It's fantasy horror, but the horror elements are very much in the sort of Hellraiser school of body horror, and it does help that you have a shonen hero who's hacking his way through, but it's really, really rough going.
Yeah, I would put Berserk in the gross out category rather than mm-hmm. the actual horror category. I mean, gross out stuff, it's kind of weird. It really kind of is its own genre, like we were talking about. And I wonder if it sounds to me like the big difference here is that manga can afford to hold an image. Manga can afford to put sumptuous detail into something that will get a visceral reaction from you. It just the format in and of itself, the graphic novel format, is just better suited to telling a scary story than a, you know, quickly animated something with a television budget. They just can't pull it off. And I wonder if that's why you don't really ever see anime adaptations of a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, like and with regular cell animation that we would have seen up to, like hand-painted cell animation up to the year 2000, it was probably way too limiting for that, like you were kind of saying. I think with more what they're doing now, you could do more CG shows that would help get across extra lines and things, but that's just, the CG is so much more expensive, like it's just not happening, not with falling budgets and a recession.
I've noticed that I think some of the awesomest horror stories coming out in Japan right now are actually starting out in the form of visual novels and galge and stuff like that. Like Lunar Legend Tsukihime, the Higurashi series, Saya no Uta, just some really creepy, dark, depressing stories. And often, of course, they'll start out creepy and scary, then they'll degenerate into some kind of stupid fighting thing or something like that. But I think in some cases, the stuff that is being done in this format is really good. And maybe it has something to do with, you know, like the experiential nature of, like, the whole galge thing, you know, with all of its... You know, with all of its, you know, sleaziness. I mean, like, say you're playing a galge. You're alone in a room at night, probably. Now, you know, you could be scared or something else could happen. You don't know. Or maybe it's also a great time to be scared, is what I'm saying.
I want my money back.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's interesting.
An Aragoro galge.
Screams of fright could escape from your body, awakening your parents. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, that's a good point. There is a lot of that in the galge crowd. The biggest and most popular one is probably the Higurashi series, I think.
It's pretty scary.
People point to that as a good example of horror anime. I've never seen it, but a lot of people...
Oh, you should see it. Yes, it's very much worth your time.
It's very well plotted.
And it's the first example that I can think of, really, where you see the whole moe trope really seriously subverted in a very mature fashion.
Right, and it's a horror title, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't really describe it any other way.
All the endings are horrible in their own unique way.
Right.
Yeah. It all ties together.
I don't think it's a big surprise, though, because the biggest advances that I've seen personally in terms of actually scaring the person who is the viewer has been in video games in the last 10 years or so. I've had more terrifying moments playing scary video games than watching scary movies in the last 10 years, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see that.
I don't play a lot of them, but I wanted to share that. What's the video game where, like, you're playing and there hasn't been a save point in a long time?
Oh, Eternal Darkness.
And then it looks like your machine shuts down. It looks like your whatever PlayStation turns off and the lights go off. And you're like, oh my God, I haven't saved in like 2 hours. And then like everything powers back on because your sanity meter had fallen like too low in the game.
Eternal Darkness fucks with you so much. That game was incredibly scary. And I loved it. I loved every minute of it. Like, I ate that game alive because it was so compelling, and it was the really first effective, God dang, this is scary video game. And I think that the Galgay stuff definitely ties in because you're interacting with it directly. And the odds, like Jason said, that you are alone in a dark room playing this, the atmosphere is all there. You know, it's just much more conducive towards being actually scary and involving you in the terror. You know, the other example I can think of was Heavy Rain, which you have to directly sit there and hold the controller and do these horrible things and enter into these horrible situations knowing that you can't progress unless you take the next step. And you really don't fucking want to, but you have to.
Speaking of Eternal Darkness, guys, we should write a Cthulhu visual novel game or galaxy. It's probably been done.
Have you heard of the Moe Narlasotep novel?
Oh, yes.
Oh, only in the... You wrote an article, right? About IO9 or something? Yeah, we should talk about Cthulhu in anime.
Explain what that is so people know what that is.
What Cthulhu is?
This novel that Jason was talking about.
Okay. I'm actually having trouble remembering its full name right now, but I believe it's something Nyaru-kun or Nyaru-chan. And it's a novel, it's a moeization, you know, which is based on the evil gods, space monsters, evil creatures created by H.P. Lovecraft in his, you know, so-called Cthulhu Mythos, which are typically described as like gigantic, like evil presences or like blobs of tentacles or like weird fish, lizard creatures. But in this light novel, it takes the form of like a hot young girl or other, you know, like a moe looking young girl. And it's all about like her. She's actually like the incarnation of ultimate evil. And she's, you know, trying, she's come to Earth to like pave the way for the destruction of the world and to unleash her fellows to destroy the cosmos and all humanity. And, you know, and she's really moe afon. Excuse me.
It's a metaphor.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah,
no. Interesting.
Destroying everything.
You know, the Lovecraft stuff really has not been adapted into any other medium. That stuff is pretty scary. Like, I've read a lot of those books, and to visualize it is much more terrifying than what's on the page, which is why the occasional illustration you see, you know, it's pretty frightening stuff. I'm surprised we don't see more of that. And you'd think anime would be one place where they would pick up on that kind of thing.
Well, there's some, you know, references to it here and there. I mean, you know, whenever I used to watch, like, you know, a lot of anime with my friends, and there was some weird monster with, like, tentacles or something, somebody would claim that it was a H.P. Lovecraft reference. And, in fact, the creator of Legend of the Overfiend was an H.P. Lovecraft fan, so, you know. Believe it or not, maybe there is a connection there. although H.P. Lovecraft would probably not have liked it. Even Nakota Hirano has made H.P. Lovecraft references. So it's just kind of this cult thing. But I think I bet manga editors and anime producers discourage it because they don't want to, you know, they're worried about getting sued. I don't know.
Well, it's all public domain now. At least his stuff is.
They're very careful about it.
One of the difficulties with adaptations of Lovecraft works is that so much of the horror is mind-bendingly horrific that it can't be displayed, because to display it is to give it a name and an image, and that takes away a lot of the thrust that the stories have. Because
if you're saying like nameless horror,
Lovecraft is not. I enjoy much of his work a great deal. But he's not a dazzling prose stylist. What he is good at doing is making you afraid, but you're not sure exactly of what.
They should just retitle all of his books, "Guys, seriously, so scary you can't even think about it."
Right. But it's a problem because if you had a horror film like that, you would do everything but show the monster. And the genre demands that you show the monster. You can't get away without showing the monster. And that's why so many times I think in horror movies that don't do very well, it can be plenty scary until you see the monster. And then it's, you know, it's a guy in a suit. People disagree with me. And I know I don't know if we're on to talking about live action stuff. People disagree with me. But I had that feeling in Alien, where at the end of Alien, you see him, right? He's standing there. And for me, that was a big letdown. When you can actually see the creature backlit and you can get the entire sense of its proportions and see that it kind of it moves not like a creature but kind of like a guy in a costume, that's the antithesis of horror.
See, I disagree with you on Alien specifically. Not in other movies. I think you're right about a lot of other movies. But I just picked up the Alien Blu-ray set. I'm a huge fan of the Alien franchise. And I just rewatched that last night, actually. And I think it's one of the most effective horror movies I've ever seen, especially when they show the creature, because it's just so... I mean, H.R. Giger's crazy penis monsters are scary. They're scary-looking things, and they use it effectively. You know, the shot where Ripley is messing around with the console trying to get the escape pod out, and the alien's head is designed to look like one of the tubes on the walls, and the head slowly comes out. That's scary as shit.
Yeah, totally. You're totally right.
And even though at that point you know what the creature looks like, they effectively use it. It's what you do with the monster after you show it, not just constantly showing the Stan Winston rubber head over and over and over again. But to transition, and before we fully transition into our final little topic here, just a fun little discussion of live action horror. Do you think that horror is a genre that anime should move into in order to innovate? Do you think there's room for innovation there? Do you think it's a place it could go to give us something new?
Like, I watched the first episode of High School of the Dead, and I don't know, zombies actually really scared me. And like, even though it was like boobs bouncing or whatever, I was still sort of like, oh shit, guys, zombie apocalypse, what are you gonna do? Like, I was compelled to find out I don't know if I was like scared or anything, but I thought that was all right. I don't know. There's a lot of vampires in anime, but we haven't really touched on vampires yet.
Vampires aren't scary anymore.
They're not
that scary anymore.
Were they ever scary?
Well, you have like Vampire Hunter D.
No,
right?
And the second one, Bloodlust, was really good. I'd recommend those, both of those.
I think that Vampire Hunter D, the first one at least, is canon.
Yeah. Second one is really well animated, and even though it's kind of over the top in a crazy way, like, I think there's a lot of good stuff in there.
When I watched the humans transforming into vampires in Blood, the Last Vampire, like years ago, I was like, whoa. But then when I actually saw the anime, I was like, oh, well, you know, so it's some girl killing vampires.
Yep. bit of a disappointment, really.
And that weird foreign-made dub. What are you doing on this train? It's really fucking weird.
The CG is outdated.
There's not a, I mean, personally, I think it's, I'd like to see more horror anime, but I don't know that there's a whole lot of room for innovation there. If they're just going to use elements of horror and keep mixing them up with other genres, you know, we don't see a lot of just pure horror anime. We see horror mixed with moe, horror mixed with shonen, horror mixed with shoujo, like Vampire Knight, for example, stuff like that.
Doesn't seem to be very marketable.
Yeah, no.
At the very least.
I don't think so. So I don't think we're going to see a lot of it, but I don't know. Maybe they could go there and find some new frontiers, find some new places to innovate in that genre. Because it's certainly one that, just like we said, has not really been overdone in anime yet, I don't think. So finally, before we wrap up, let's talk a little bit about live-action horror. What are you guys into? Jason, what's the last movie you saw that you thought was actually scary?
Oh, man. Well, actually, I haven't seen it yet, but I've been waiting for a while to see Antichrist by Lars von Trier. I have reason to believe that will be scary. I missed M. Night Shyamalan's Devil because I'm like everyone else on the planet. I'm kind of over M. Night Shyamalan, but the ads were great.
Have you seen Irreversible?
Oh, I haven't. Okay. But yeah, I know that's another one that's on my list to watch, like, you know, one weekend when there's no one else in the house and I can like curl up and cry.
Yeah, well, Antichrist is quote unquote scary in the same way that that movie is quote unquote scary, and that there's terrifying depictions of horrible things happening and you squick, but it's not like scary.
You know, the fear of looking at the screen because you don't want to see the horrible thing that's going to happen, that's a form of horror. It's one of the actually scariest movies that I can think of, period, is Cairo, which was this Japanese film by Kiyoshi Kurosawa, which was later made into the completely crappy American movie Pulse. It's a movie about ghosts on the internet, and the summary doesn't do justice to what a creepy movie it is.
But it's better than Pulse, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's way better than Pulse. It's my favorite J-horror movie of all.
Really? That's interesting. I've seen plenty of J-horror, but none of it's really gotten me. I actually preferred the American versions of, like, The Ring and The Grudge, neither of which were very good, but I thought they were more interesting and compelling than their Japanese counterparts, at least. I know I'm probably alone on that.
It's weird, because I've watched Pulse twice, and the first time I was watching it with some friend of mine who didn't really care about horror movies, and we were watching it in broad daylight, and I wasn't scared at all. But then I saw it again, knowing the whole plot, and I saw it again, like, in the dark with, like, some really, really chicken people who were freaked out, and it was like... And then that's when I realized it is truly the scariest. It's truly one of the scariest horror movies I can think of. But it's great because it like a lot of the J horror movies that became popular in the 90s and 2000. It's like it doesn't have any like special really monster effects. It's all scary with like just people's faces and like people like moving in weird ways and like. Faces and people like creeping out where you don't expect them, because it's about an invasion of ghosts. Basically, it's like a zombie movie but for ghosts. It's about the end of the world from too many ghosts, and that's the plot of the movie.
So they called it that. Too many ghosts with an exclamation point at the end.
I know,
it's a musical.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Aaron and Noah, what about you guys? Anything? What's the last like scary movie you saw?
I tend to avoid horror movies because they actually scare me, and then I keep thinking about them for days, and I don't like that in my life. So I only see horror films if they're considered like a classic of cinema, because I like movies. So like I've seen the original, what's it, Day of the Dead. I don't know, the sequel.
Night of the Living Dead?
Night of the Living Dead. And the one in the mall. I saw that one too. Or, you know, I guess Alien, which is both sci-fi and horror. So like, I think the last one I actually watched, because everyone was like, you have to see this, was like Shaun of the Dead. And that was like, what, 4 years ago?
Eh, it's a comedy, though.
And a comedy.
It's kind of scary, actually.
Zombies really scare me. Maybe it's because I watched Dawn of the Dead first with my friends alone in a house in the countryside at night.
Like, yeah.
Bad move. And like the X-Files used to scare the crap out of me in high school, because I'd watch it like alone at night in the house in the middle of nowhere where it's like, pitch dark outside all the time, so I'm just like, any minute aliens are gonna scare the crap out of me.
Like, X-Files has that one shot where she's laying in the hospital bed and there's that white curtain that's pulled and you see the shadow of the alien like reaching for her. That's terrified me when I was like 13.
Yeah.
It also didn't help that like around that time in the early 90s there were all these like poorly like fake kind of bad pseudo news shows like on Fox that would be like,
oh yeah,
Close Encounters are totally real, we're interviewing the following hicks who've been anally probed. And that was like, now it's a cliche, but back in the day, like the even daytime talk shows would have like the alien episode that I would like wait for, where I'm like, oh my god, Jenny Jones is gonna have alien abductees, this is gonna be amazing. And it was just so creepy. Oh, and I saw really good, this is not really along those lines, but it's one of the freakiest things I've seen along that kind of like realistic lines. There was this documentary, and I forget who the filmmaker was, and it's not going to help that I don't remember the title either, but they used to show it on IFC a lot in like 2000 and 2001, and it was all interviewing like people in Canada, this is getting like stranger and stranger, who swear that they've seen fairies or like little people, like I want to say leprechauns but not really, like in Nova Scotia or somewhere like that. All of the people in this documentary are totally convinced that they really saw something and something crazy happened. And some people, I don't know, sometimes there's a curse involved or whatever.
Wow.
But it's so like, it's affecting because like the documentarian is taking them very seriously, and they are dead serious, and they're different ages and all different social classes. And like, I saw that a couple of times on TV when I was in college, where I caught the beginning, then I'm like, these people are nuts, but they really, really believe what they're saying. Like, they really think they saw. And then like, I watched like the end of it another time, and if I saw it on TV again, I'm like, oh, it's that amazing documentary. And I guess it's not, that's not horror at all, but sometimes crappy things happen to them. What? Sometimes like the older people would claim someone died because when they were kids they saw this little person and they were cursed, and then so and so died right after. And those are kind of the less believable stories.
Hey, Leprechaun got like what, 5 sequel?
6, actually, I think. If you count both Leprechaun and the Hood movies.
Oh. Well, there were 2. Oh. Yeah.
There were 2 Leprechaun.
I've got to get out more often.
Noah, what about you?
The pinnacle of horror in America, in American cinema at least, was the 1970s. And
yeah, it's very true.
I would love to see it come back.
Oh, like a few Halloweens ago or something, we watched like the countdown of the 100 scariest films or 100 scariest moments in films or something, and they showed a lot of clips of 70s horror movies. That freaked me out. Like, I couldn't watch the whole movie. Forget about it. Like, the clip of the movie.
The Exorcist, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Hills Have Eyes, Last House on the Left. I'm talking about the original.
David Cronenberg's movie.
Cronenberg.
Christ, I can't watch
Cronenberg started, gosh, you're right, Dead Ringers.
I saw the
Rabid.
One of the gynecologist. That's like the scariest movie I've ever seen.
Wow, yeah. Don't forget Shivers, the movie about the sex zombies.
I haven't seen it.
I forget that I heard about that.
But all of it is shot on this really scratchy, overblown film stock that gives it that documentary feel. And they don't use good-looking actors. They use, you know, people who you could find off the street who get sweaty and bloody. And the fear that you feel those actors having is, at least in the case of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, those actors really were terrified. But just in general, there's this real crude feel to the whole thing where
feels more real.
It's now a cliche when you talk about like slasher pictures. Anyone could die at any time. But in the 1970s, that really felt like it was so. And
it was a sense of real danger, actual danger.
That will keep you, on the edge of your seat.
Yeah, no, I agree. The one movie that I hold up as the best horror movie I've seen, probably since going through most of the 70s and 80s stuff, just the most effective horror movie I've seen in recent times was Frank Darabont's version of The Mist. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
No, I didn't realize that it was
really good.
Okay.
Like really, really good. And if you get the Blu-ray, it's got they redid it in black and white, which is also very effective. But I thought it was just a great piece of horror. Great piece of horror and real tension. Had a lot to say about fanaticism in times of chaos. It was really, really effective. Great horror. I just really liked it. And in terms of actually being scary, although the movie was sort of half comedy, some of the moments in Drag Me to Hell were genuinely really upsetting. If you haven't seen that, it's Sam Raimi's last big effort at horror.
Right.
And there's some shots of shadowy hands coming in the door and stuff that is very effective. It's very effective, I think, anyway. But Jason, you sound like you're sort of an aficionado in this genre.
I love horror. I've done horror comics and stuff like that, and I don't know. I can't say I've seen everything out there, but I totally agree about the 70s being like this golden age, if you would call it that, of horror, because suddenly all this like movie censorship had been unleashed, and it was such a chaotic time in society, and like there was just like no limits on what people were showing in films, and there was such a dark mood, you know. A lot of the Italian horror movies at the time were like stuff by Dario Argento and Lucio Fulci are some of the creepiest and the grossest things you could ever imagine. And I don't know, some of John Carpenter stuff, The Thing. I do like some of the handheld camera horror movies like The Blair Witch Project and Paranormal Activity. I thought those were both pretty good.
Yeah, actually, I saw The Blair Witch Project before it became this huge cultural thing, like when they were just doing the little promotional screenings, they would drop it into a mall
Really?
Yeah,
whoa.
Yeah, like they would drop it into a mall and they'd invite you to a preview screening of an upcoming film and you go in and you watch this. Like, I didn't really know what it was walking into it. If you knew what that movie was going into it, you're like, whatever. If you didn't know, you're fucking terrified the whole time. Like, it's really scary. If you see that movie with no knowledge of it going in, it's pretty damn scary. At least during the parts where they're not just wandering around aimlessly, which is most of the movie.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's amazing how so much of it was improvised. Like, the same with Paranormal Activity. They kind of just put these actors there in almost like a role-playing game scenario. And we're like, all right, yeah, you're trapped in the woods. Just pretend that you're not in a movie. And they're like, oh, crap, we're trapped in the woods. And then they genuinely got freaked out being like, you know, stalked by these filmmakers in the woods. It's nothing but their handheld cameras to protect them, you know. Yeah. Good stuff.
I wanted to jump in and say, like, I heard of this indie horror role-playing game that I haven't played it, but where you have the, instead of rolling a dice or anything, you have like Jenga blocks, like a Jenga tower in front of you, and every time you take an action, you pull the DM tells you, you know, oh, pull a block or pull two blocks or something. And apparently, like, you can do things like, you can do something really heroic and have your action succeed if you knock over the tower yourself, but if you pull the block that makes the tower fall, then you die in the most horrific way possible. The scenarios are like, oh, it's a zombie kind of movie thing, or it's a whatever kind of, I think there's another, maybe a vampire, but I guess vampires aren't scary. But it sounded like a really good game, because the tension in the room builds and builds as the tower like looks like it's going to collapse with the next block.
Wow.
Huh, that's cool. Cool. All right, guys. Well, that was a fun conversation. Thanks thanks for coming on and contributing to this seasonally relevant chat.
I'm scared now.
Thank you.
I know. I'm alone in this dark house. And my wife is at a bachelorette party. And, you know,
no.
I'm gonna have to like curl up in like the closet or something, and you know, huddle with my laptop for warmth. But
you should watch a scary movie.
Don't let the ghost know.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Okay, that's our show. Thanks everyone for joining us. See you all next week.